Welcome to the Pitt Rivers Museum's Matters of Policy podcast. This is a podcast in which we explore the museum's collections development policy, speaking with guests from across the globe to delve into the language used and consider what really matters in this policy.
Hi, I'm Alexis.
And hi, I'm Yip. And today we're talking to Aiko Soga, a Japanese artist who's worked closely with Ainu communities. And she's here to talk about her experiences working with the Pitt Rivers Museum and the collection development policies.
All right. So first question, can you tell us a bit about your experience working with the Pitt Rivers? How did you get involved?
There are two stories to tell. One is I had my first encounter with Pitt Rivers in 2016 when I was working as a freelance artist, also as a visitor to the museum. The second story is my experience working with Marenka. So these two are quite different experiences. Shall I talk about both experiences?
Both would be great.
Working with Marenka has been really, really wonderful. We met through our mutual interest in Ainu community and their culture. I think you have around 330 artifacts of the Ainu community. Sorry, I can't remember how we met. We haven't physically met because of the COVID, but we connected and we talked a lot about the idea of decolonization, and I was in Hokkaido, Japan, working on my field work with the Ainu community. So I was sharing my experience with Marenka, and I was appreciating her approach to the idea of decolonization and how the museum can change or progress, or basically what they can do to make things more positive for everyone. My second point, but the more first experience with the museum, I was a freelance artist and I was already working with the Ainu community for my project. And I knew Pitt Rivers had quite a good collection of Ainu artifacts. So I got in touch with the museum and asked if I could engage with some of the artifacts. And unfortunately, I was declined because I didn't belong to any institution or I wasn't formally a researcher. And so I didn't have any access or couldn't find anyone who could help me. So I just had to give up. So that was kind of sad part of first encounter, but I did go to the museums and that was great.
It seems like two different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
How do these experiences compare with your initial reaction to reading the policy?
So that's a very tricky question for me, because when I first engaged with the museum, I didn't go in, you know, having read these policies. I had no idea about it. But now, you know, I've been working with Marenka, so I have better sense of what museum is trying to do. I think there's a gap between what's written and what's being communicated through spoken communication. I have dyslexia, and so, you know, for me, understanding policy and with quite specific language is quite a big challenge. I don't know if I should pick up some specific points or really general response.
Yeah, I mean, go as specific as you would like, especially in regards to your experiences with access regarding the Pitt Rivers collections. Do you think the Pitt Rivers is successful in maintaining a degree of access to its collections?
I think being asked if it's successful is a little bit challenging. Sorry, I'm just thinking about the idea of success. Well, you know, we can always make changes and we can always have more and more conversations to make things better. So, you know, when I read the policies in written format, the language is quite somehow top down and very formal. And I guess, you know, it has to be formal, but it's not very accessible for me. And I say this because when I work with Ainu community, elders often say, oh, you know, like all the researchers and academics come in to work with us, but they speak the language we don't understand. And I really feel, you know, why they say what they said to me. There's so much gap between human to human empathetic language to what can be written as policy. It feels like so much space in between. So maybe there's room to fill in that gap. Whereas, you know, if I go into the museum in person, there are lots of beautiful, amazing artifacts that are created by people. It's full of details and cares and human qualities. I do wish the policy can be somehow written in like a more compassionate language, if that's possible.
So would you say that the policies ensure to honor the emotional, inspirational connection between the people and objects? Or is the CDP bypassing this connection between objects and people?
I was thinking, you know, I understand the format and common sense of, you know, policy culture. But often, like Pitt River's artifacts come from communities and culture of people who didn't have written form of the language. To me, that's a really important aspect, because if I assume we work a lot with like written language, and I'm Japanese and I'm raised and conditioned to learn through written language. For example, you know, at school, or even now as a researcher, or, you know, a PhD candidate at Oxford, I'm required to read a lot and make sense of the world through written language. But how can we understand the people and culture whose social norm has been nurtured through non-written language? So I think that's the biggest gap between the artifact and the policies written on the paper.
Do you think the Pitt Rivers Museum has done more to ensure such care between people and objects than currently reflected in the policy? Or is this still absent in practice as well?
Well, my experience with museum is limited, so I'm probably missing a lot of things that is happening at the museum. But I think we can do a lot more with effort to understand the culture that values their spiritual sense and emotional aspect. Like, we need to unlearn our social norm and learn from those communities that has very different cultural norm. So, you know, these policies are a standard of the Western norm, right? Or like the British norm. But if you're working with different communities, we have to step towards their values and understand them. So, yeah, I think any agreements and policies needs to have a space and room to have long conversation that requires sensitive understanding. Ideally, like, invite people from the community and scholars and be open to keep working on the policies. Sorry, did I answer your question?
Yeah, I think it also answered the question that I was going to ask on how do you think museums can better incorporate Indigenous ways of knowing into their collection policies going forward?
I just wanted to read you a quote by this scholar in Canada. She's called Leanne Simpson, who wrote a book titled Dancing on Our Turtle's Back in 2011. She said, "The starting point within Indigenous theoretical frameworks then is different than from within Western theories, which is the spiritual world is alive and influencing. Colonialism is contested, and storytelling or narrative imagination is a tool to vision other existences outside of the current ones. By critiquing and analyzing the current state of affairs, but also by dreaming and visioning others' reality." And I really value what she wrote in there. For example, invite this Leanne Simpson, she's like wonderful, and like organize a conversation or workshop, someone like her. She's both academic and an artist who has, you know, insider point of view as an Indigenous person. But having said that, each community have different value systems and ways of sustaining their social norm and cultural norms. So whenever you have different project or like specific project with specific communities, best is to just have a conversation, ask them, like ask their values, and then like discuss what's best for both ends of people who are involved. So there's no one answer.
It seems like there's more of an emphasis on relationships between people rather than a sort of hierarchical exchange, if that makes sense.
Yes, I think we need to be open to unexpected conversations and unexpected needs. You're right, it has to be like human to human, like conversation first before anything written on paper. Because most important thing is when I work with Ainu culture is very diverse. Traditionally more and more region specific. Their culture was region specific, considering their natural resources they had and geographical condition. So even like looking at the Ainu community, you can't just talk about them as one community. There are so many different thoughts, wishes, and different background. This region specificity is really important as well. So anything written can be useful, but also become a barrier.
So then we're looking at trying to get oral sources represented in the museum too, right? So not just focusing on written sources. Do you have maybe any artistic examples or any ideas of including oral sources within the museum space?
Yes, I think what I really wish to see when I go to the museum is the people's voice, actual voice, and smell, sound, any like sensory stimulation or sensory information. I do interview a lot with Ainu communities, and it is their voice that is so important to me because it includes feelings and the subtle like nuances of their thoughts, which can open up a lot of understanding towards their culture. And also the language is like a really important aspect to me. Like if we go to the museum now, everything is written in English, and I wish to understand different communities' language that would provide us different worldview. So anything like spoken in their own language is also important.
So speaking about different ways of displaying and representing objects in a museum, could you elaborate on the work you've been doing to represent Ainu objects in different ways?
Yes, with the salmon shoes video I made, I wanted to think about ecology of spoken words and feelings, and how shared thoughts are such intangible and ephemeral and changeable thing that generate thinking and our future and understanding the past. So that's something I did through making a video work by recreating a pair of fish shoes I learned to make by Ainu community in Hokkaido. There's another video work I made called Ainu Hunter Monchan. It's also a video work following an Ainu hunter who is my age, and he quit all of his like 9-to-5 job to focus on practicing his tradition as Ainu hunter. And I made a video work with him to share my process of embodying his value system and his belief system. Because I've read about Ainu hunter in books and read folklores, I spoke with elders, but I never really understood it properly when they talk about their idea of kamui, which is often translated as spiritual beings or gods. But this word kamui refers to like nature, animals, any tools, everything basically apart from humans. And I didn't understand what this Monchan, the Ainu hunter, meant when he referred to kamui. But I went to the mountain with him to watch him hunt. and I saw him praying to the fire god. And the way he engaged with trees or like plants or air or the sky. And then I finally had small sense of understanding towards his value system. It's really hard to recreate my embodiment of his value system, but I feel like making artwork or video work can maybe offer one more step to understand different culture, different values. It's just an effort and an attempt to try understanding is really important to me.
There are a number of passages that stood out to us. One of them is, you know, the museum is committed to making its collections accessible to the widest possible audience, as detailed in the museum's access policy. In the CDP, there's not a lot of attention given to access, to ensuring equal access, especially in regards to Indigenous stakeholder communities where a lot of these objects and artifacts are originally from. So I suppose the question is, what do you envision to make museum collections more accessible to Indigenous communities, and what could be changed in order to better reflect the voices of Indigenous communities, the equal ownership of Indigenous communities to their own artifacts, to their own heritage, specifically regarding in the CDP?
I think that is a very big question. But again, I go back to the idea of having good conversation with the artists who make the artifact, have good conversation with community and understand their value system, have more and more conversation about, I guess, critical theory around what it means to do field work, what it means to like decolonize, what does post-colonialism means. Those conversations need to like happen a lot more. But in terms of the policies written, there are so many things. I guess important things are to make sure to document who made the artifact in which region, because with the Ainu artifact at the Pitt Rivers Museum, most of them are documented as Ainu, Hokkaido, Japan. That's all. So it's really hard to track back where this artifact came from in Hokkaido, because there are so many communities, like different tribes, different communities there. And we can just guess from looking at the pattern of the kimono, or like little details suggest some information, but not enough to track down who made it. Also, I was thinking that maybe more collaboration with different institutions can be helpful, because I know in England there are 2 or 3 more institutions that hold Ainu collections. And once I came across with photograph of people, and one person in the photograph looked so familiar, although it was from 100 years ago. And so I took the screenshot of the photo and sent it to my friend. And he said, "Oh my God, that is my uncle." And, you know, that is a very important finding. But that was a very unexpected encounter, like unintended encounter. But those things can open up so much. At the moment, a lot of information is so hidden or like not exposed to public. You have to really dig so much to find out what's there. So maybe have open access to the information. Like at the moment, you have to know what the museum have to find what you're looking for. You can't just encounter them unexpectedly unless you go to the museum. But there's so much more in the storage, right?
Do you think that the current system of documentation forms a barrier to access to objects because it's very difficult to even know what's in the collections? And adding to that, have you had any other experiences or heard about experience from people who have like trouble or for whom it's difficult to get to know what's in the collections?
I think that to begin with, a lot of people I met in Ainu community, for example, they've never been to England, many of them. Many of them have been to Pitt Rivers, but it's just a visit for a day or like a visit for 2 days to like check out the collection. There isn't enough time or chance for the community to understand that museum actually own a lot of wonderful collection. It's not even a point of they don't have enough access to the artifact. You know, they don't even know the existence of this collection at the museum. So that could be maybe worked on. You know, when I was in Hokkaido, I spoke about your collection a lot to the people I was working with, and they're all fascinated. They all want to see them. But first thing they would say is that, oh, we can't go to England. You know, we wish to see them, but we can't. And that was always like the sadness we talk about. So somehow maybe the collection can go to Hokkaido or can be arranged to have exhibition and invite the people there or something.
Yeah, because I think the policy also states that the aim is to make sure that the collection is available to the widest possible public. But like hearing from this conversation, it sounds as if Ainu peoples are not always included within this notion of the public.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be a problem.
Yes, notion of public. How much can museums step outside of the museum to engage with the community could be perhaps important. And also invite those people to the museum. I know these things are happening already, but as far as I know, with the Ainu community, it's not done very much so far. We are working on it, but with, of course, with the COVID, it has become a much harder task. Even for me, like, I still haven't seen the collection that isn't in the display yet. So somehow, I don't know how, but like, if the access to the artifact in the storage has become like easier. Like, I know there's a list of artifacts on the database, but a lot of them don't have photos, just like written quite general information. So that's not really helpful, because if I want to see one thing casually, I know how hard it is for the museum to like bring it out or like to go and have a look at it. Just having like more photograph would help.
That's interesting. A number of our other guests suggested digitization as a way of improving access to collections.
While the museum has such big, large collection, yeah, I want to do as much as I can do on my end to like find out what you have. And without knowing what you have, I can't ask for it. Publicly open database.
Yeah, transparency is key. Collaboration is key. Access is key.
Yes, definitely. More conversations.
Was there anything else that you wanted to add? Anything that sort of caught your eye when you were going through the policy that you wanted to talk about?
I mean, the most important thing is to actually talk with the community. And I so much wish I was with Mrs. Kaneko Magai, who I've been working with since last year, for about a year. So when I had conversation with Ms. Kumagai and Marenka over Zoom when I was in Hokkaido, we asked Mrs. Kumagai what kind of detail she thinks that should be included in agreement or policies. One thing she said was she makes Ainu kimono, and she was talking about if Ainu kimono was to go into the museum, which you already have as part of your collection. She said kimono was made to be worn, and if her kimono was going into the collection, she wants to make sure if anyone wants to wear it, it should be worn and it should be open to like her descendants, like her families, if they ever want to come to the Pitt Rivers and see them. Like, they should have access to the kimono. And, you know, those two things were something I couldn't say on behalf of them. So the key is to speak with the community who practice the tradition or, you know, sustain the value systems.
Really interesting. I think that also ties in with the idea of access to objects, because you can say, if you're not using the object in the way it was meant to be used, are you really accessing the object? So that's a barrier too. So that's great that you highlight that we really need to start those conversations in order to hear how we should represent the objects in the museum. Is there anything else you wanted to convey?
Oh, one thing I wanted to talk about is to maybe have more research on how each collection was collected. For example, you know, unfortunately, a lot of like anthropological artifacts are spoken about through an idea of like they were stolen or like taken, and you know, quite negative. You know, it's often talked about through negative ideas, and like the focus is on the negative aspect of past. But I know, like with Ainu artifact, a woman called Isabella Bird, a British woman who traveled extensively in Japan and spent some time with Ainu community, I think around end of 19th century. I might be wrong, but around that time. And she's still like talked about by community with quite compassionate approach. And people say like she was a good person. So what she collected was a genuine gift, whether it's true or not. That's what people talk now. So I think talking about both negative side of the history, but also understanding there are some positive too, is also important to me, because I want to highlight the effort this woman has made and to understand the community. Therefore, she had some gifts, and you know, her approach suggests, I think it's really important to remember those effort this woman made, and therefore wonderful artifact is preserved while it could have been sold and got damaged if it was left in Japan, for example. It shouldn't be mixed with like negative history. So I want to be careful about that, because it's not to justify the dark history, but also like that shouldn't dismiss the positive things that happened as well.
Yeah, I think that well reflects the complexities behind the history of the collections. And again, it highlights how much we need conversation in order to discover the real truth behind these objects and the stories behind these objects.
All right, let's wrap it up there, as we don't want to take too much of your time. So thank you very much for the lovely conversation.
If the interview gets so long, editing gets really hard.
That was the Pitt Rivers Museum's Matters of Policy podcast, produced by Bessie Woodhouse, Yip Borm, Megan Mann, Alexis Foria, and Bobblehat Sound. Music by Jack Fawcett. Voiceover by Dougal Lott. A special thank you to Marenka Thompson-Odlam and the Knowledge Exchange.